Welcome back to All the Way to Memphis. Jim Stewart and Estelle Stewart Axton, his sister, didn't care what was going on at Sun when they decided to start their record company in 1957. Jim Stewart was a country fiddle player who, unlike Sam Phillips, knew next to nothing about rhythm and blues. What he did know is that Memphis had a large black music market, as WDIA had proven, and that no white businesses were recording their artists nor selling records to them. They launched Satellite Records that year, soon to be renamed Stax, a combination of Jim and Estelle's surnames, S-T-Wert and A-X-Ton, Stax. The enterprising duo purchased the Capitol Theater on the corner of College and Macklemore Avenue, converted the main auditorium into a recording studio, and turned the concession area into a record store. A 15-year-old Booker Jones haunted the place, showing up nearly every day to look for records and to listen surreptitiously to the music that could be heard coming out of the converted adjacent main auditorium. Rufus Thomas was the only well-known artist to sign with Stax initially. He insisted that Stewart sign his daughter, Carla, to a recording contract, too. Carla Thomas and another local teenager named Isaac Hayes had made a name for themselves on WDIA's weekly showcase, Teen Town. Jim Stewart profited from signing Miss Thomas sooner than expected, as it was she and not her father who gave Stax its first national hit in 1960. Carla may have given Stax its first top 20 hit, but it was the Marquees who first defined the Stax sound. In 1961, the instrumental group, which included Jim Stewart's nephew, Packy Axton, on sax, and a young Missourian named Steve Cropper on guitar, had a surprise summer hit with its swinging Southern fried, Last Night. The song reached number 3 on the pop charts and number 1 on the R&B charts in 1961. The Marquees splintered a year or so after their big hit, with Cropper joining a new Stax studio backup band called Booker T and the MGs, and the horn players becoming the Memphis Horns. One night in between sessions, Booker T and the MGs came up with a riff. It would become the Hammond B3 organ groove of the entire soul music era. Green Onions also reached number 3 on the pop charts and number 1 on the R&B charts in the fall of 1962. The song ended up being the highest charting and biggest selling composition of Booker T and the MG's career. Although the band didn't break into the white pop charts top 10 again until 1968 with Hang 'em High, in the interim they were the most influential instrumental group in all of pop music throughout the 60s, and that is not an overstatement. In California, Memphis native Arthur Lee started his own band and named them the L.A. G's in tribute to the M.G's. In Macon, Georgia, a 21-year-old Otis Redding was so impressed by Green Onions and the music he heard coming out of Stax that he convinced his rhythm and blues band to travel to Memphis to audition for the label. When Booker T and the MGs weren't recording their own material, they were the studio band that played behind some of the most storied soul singers of all time, most notably the Big O, as he was affectionately called by the Stax family. Otis was still a star in waiting, however, when Rufus Thomas delivered the label's first vocal hit in the now-established Soulful Stax style. In 1963, Rufus gave Black America a dance party favorite for the third year in a row with Walking the Dog. Remember Deanie Parker, the charming Memphian we spoke to at the outset of the special? She was an office assistant and songwriter back in the early 60s for Stax Records. I asked her about the always funny Rufus Thomas and Walking the Dog.
First of all, it requires an agile body. And of course, Rufus was the perfect teacher because he was the world's oldest teenager, as we know. You know, one of the gifts that Rufus had and one of the blessings is, as well, is that Rufus grew up with children in his home. It was Marvell, Carla, and Vanice. And so Rufus was always connected with what the children were saying, what they were doing, and what was of interest to them at the time that he was recording at Stax Records through his children. So that was a real blessing. But then he had the innate ability to be able to translate that into songs and dance. And I am so certain, although I've not been told that this is a fact, I'm certain that Rufus more than likely worked out the movements and the steps to Walking the Dog in his living room with the benefit of his children. But you know, it really was kind of simple. As I saw Rufus do it, you just kind of sort of stand in one place, but you got to have the body parts and you got to have the movement and you got to have rhythm in order to pull off Walking the Dog.
Mary Mac, dressed in black, silver buttons all down her back. High low, tipsy toe, she broke the needle and she can't sew. Walking the Dog.
Al Bell joined the label's management as chief of promotions in 1965. Bell was masterful at cajoling and charming Black DJs across the nation to play the latest Stax release. But it was the music that really sold the DJs. The label's sound was immensely popular across the pond. An impressed John Lennon dispatched the Beatles' manager Brian Epstein to scout out the Stax operation. Deanie Parker recounted that the Fab Four seriously considered recording a portion of their album, Revolver, at the Stax studio. Alas, it never happened because Epstein concluded there wasn't enough security in Memphis to keep the lads safe. Otis Redding had gone from being a starry-eyed, strapping country boy to the country boy who was the star of Stax. Redding was convincing everyone who saw him perform that he was the heir apparent to the late Sam Cooke's crown as king of the soul singers.
When you sing this song, it'll make your whole body move. It goes bap, 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 bap. Bap, 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 your turn now.
strengthen the roster of musicians, Jim Stewart and Estelle Axton brought in a young keyboardist named Isaac Hayes.
Baby.
Hayes played on studio sessions when Booker T was away earning his music degree at Indiana University. Isaac Hayes, like Carla Thomas, was an alum of WDIA's Teen Town Jamboree. The bonus was that Hayes turned out to be a superb songwriter. Along with his writing partner David Porter, Hayes wrote B-A-B-Y Baby for Carla Thomas and all of Sam and Dave's biggest hits, including Soul Man and this underappreciated gem.
I want everybody to get up off your seat and get your arms together and your hands together and give me some of that old soul clapping. You didn't have to love me like you did, but you did, but you did. And I thank you. You didn't have to squeeze me like you did, but you did, but you did. And I thank you. If you took
The late Ahmet Ertegun, who signed both Ray Charles and Aretha Franklin to Atlantic Records, knew a rhythm and blues juggernaut when he heard it. Ertegun inked a distribution deal with Jim Stewart and Estelle Axton. Stax Records, the little label that could, was suddenly in the big leagues. In the spring of 1967, Stax hit home run after home run, to continue the metaphor. A major promoter invited the Stax roster of soul stars on an extensive European tour. While they were overseas, a song Otis Redding and Carla Thomas had recorded bolted up the R&B charts. The lyric was basically a comic exchange between disapproving city girl Carla and indignant country bumpkin Otis. But even the novelty songs at Stax had a down-home soulfulness.
Tramp.
What you call me?
Tramp.
Well, you did.
You don't wear continental clothes or Stetson hats.
But I'll tell you one doggone thing. It makes me feel good to know one thing. I know I'm a lover.
Out of opinion.
It's all right, mama.
Right on the heels of Tramp, a newly signed group of teenagers named the Bar K's exploded onto the charts. They had yet to graduate from high school when they auditioned for the job of second-string studio band for Stax. While jamming after their March 1967 audition, they came up with a joyous horn riff. Jim Stewart and Isaac Hayes were nearby and heard it. They immediately recognized it as a hit and recorded the instrumental tune that same night. Hayes named the groove Soul Finger, and then he brought in some kids from off the streets of Soulsville to shout the song title.
Yeah.
The Stax Stars European Spring Tour had been a critical success. The who's who of British rock had taken in their London performances and were raving to the press about the soul singers of Stax. It so happened that Paul McCartney of the Beatles and the Stones' Brian Jones were advising Lou Adler on which artists should be on the concert bill for the International Pop Festival that Adler and John Phillips of the Mamas and Papas were staging in Monterey, California that upcoming June. Jones and McCartney were adamant that Otis Redding be included. Adler and Phillips agreed, and Otis seized the moment. His volcanic performance at the 67 Monterey Pop Festival blew the petals off the flower children in attendance. Longtime fans of soul music had known how good Otis Redding was for years. After Monterey, a new audience, mostly rock fans, embraced him. The concert engagements poured in. Otis recruited the eager new kids, the Bar K's, to tour with him as his backup band and opening act during the Summer of Love. While Otis and the Bar K's were on the road, Isaac Hayes and David Porter wrote and recorded Soul Man for Sam and Dave that August. The song hit number one on the R&B charts and number seven on the pop charts, earning Stax its biggest selling single to date. The label and its stars had never flown so high. For Otis and all but two of the young Bar K's, earthly aspirations would suddenly end when their small plane plunged into an icy Wisconsin lake on December 10, 1967. The date was almost 3 years to the day after Sam Cooke, Otis's idol, was shot to death in a Los Angeles motel.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting in the evening sun, watching the ships roll in, then I watch them roll away again. Yeah. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time.
A shroud of grief fell over the usually exuberant Stax family that holiday season. Jim Stewart has said that Otis Redding's death left a hole that could not be filled. Determined to exorcise Redding's ghost, Isaac Hayes and David Porter threw themselves into writing and recording upbeat songs as soon as the new year started. Wrap It Up was the next hit they handed Sam and Dave. Excitement was growing at Stax about the Staple Singers, a promising new group out of Chicago that Al Bell had signed to the label recently. Just as spirits were lifting among the musicians and staffers at 926 East Macklemore Avenue, a tragedy rocked Memphis and the nation. On April 4, 1968, an assassin fired several high-powered rifle rounds into the throat and chest of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as he stood on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel, just a few miles away from the Stax studio. Since its beginning, Stax had enjoyed an almost idyllic insulation from the intractable segregation and smoldering racial tension that still plagued Memphis. Stax was a utopia where race wasn't an issue. Booker T and the MGs were the first integrated R&B band to come out of the South. Jim Stewart and Estelle Axton were white business owners who chose to locate their operation in Soulsville, USA, the blackest and poorest neighborhood in the city. They then brought a black man, Al Bell, onto their management team. The King assassination burst the Stax utopian bubble and scarred the psyche of all admirers and supporters of King who were old enough to realize that the dreamer had been slain. African-American Memphians suffered the additional wound of knowing that King had been killed in their city, trying to help black sanitation workers earn a living wage. Somehow, they had to carry on. Retired black businessman William James Williams reflected on how African Americans in Memphis regrouped after the King assassination.
That wasn't the easiest job to do. As far as the blacks in Memphis are concerned, that really united the blacks. They worked together, they formed organizations together, and as you know, we got the Civil Rights Museum here, where these are things that the blacks were inspired to make happen. And there were many of the ministers and businessmen and so forth who got together and made this a reality.
We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved like a tree that's planted by the water. We shall not be moved.
You're listening to All the Way to Memphis. We'll be back after a short break with our final segment, featuring the music of Isaac Hayes, the Staple Singers, and Al Green, and reflections on the Memphis sound in the 21st century. Stay with us.
That's planted by the water.